Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. The UN Climate Conference in Paris has entered its second week, with delegates pushing for a final agreement that can be ratified by all. Developing countries and island nations in particular have the most at stake. Outside the halls of the meeting, activists are gathering, despite bans on protest by the French government in the wake of the ISIS attacks in Paris. My guest is Cindy Weisner. She is the National Coordinator for Grassroots Global Justice Alliance. The organization is also a co-founder of the Climate Justice Alliance. And Cindy has been in Paris for the two-week meeting. Welcome to Uprising, Cindy.
Thank you so much. Really glad to be on your show.
So first, you are also a delegate and have been both inside and outside the climate talks. This second week, when much of the media hoopla has died down, the heads of state have left, this is a very crucial week for particularly developing nations to try to get wealthier nations to agree on a number of issues. What's at stake in the second week of COP21?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I think what we're really clear about is, the writing's on the wall. You know, the climate catastrophes are a reality right now. But what's clear is that the COP21 is not based on that reality and only on what's politically expedient. And what we're seeing in the current text is that, you know, a lot of it is based on carbon markets that allow developed countries to continue emitting dangerously high levels of greenhouse gas emissions, and through techno fixes, trading schemes that result in devastating impacts such as land grabs and human rights violations. And so for us, we have been pretty skeptical about the outcome. And I think we've been talking about it as social movements, not only from the United States and Canada, but also across the world, that the accord that comes out is really going to be, in a lot of ways, a crime against vulnerable communities. And just seeing the level of corporate sponsorship and lobby and really beginning to see the outsized influence of the fossil fuel industry, I think is really intense. As simultaneously, we've seen the silencing of civil society because of the ban on protest and dissent, and I think that's a very dangerous combination.
Right. There was an interesting video report by the New Internationalist magazine that I saw where activists who went into a parallel corporate gathering called Climate Solutions, and those activists who began speaking out about dirty energy solutions like fracking were essentially immediately ejected from the meeting by security officers and police, and even those journalists who tried to cover it were ejected. So that seems to be pretty overtly about silencing dissent rather than protecting people from terrorists.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we were there. I was in that action. And I think the level of police presence, both undercover police people and just the state kind of apparatus being so clearly present here and so militarized in Paris has been pretty intense. And, I think that we had impacted leaders and community members talk about the role that those corporations that are being, have their nice kiosk in the Solutions 21 space in this Grand Palais, which is the translation is a Grand Palace. And I think that, literally carrying out people who were speaking to the impact of that particular, corporation like Total or Suez or Chevron or Exxon, and then being carried out and escorted out by the police was pretty terrible. But I think we were able to get our message across. But the squashing of protest is pretty clear.
And I understand that there have also been gatherings of indigenous communities and activists in Paris, as well as a march for women and by women.
Yes, so yesterday, members of Indigenous Environmental Network that are part of the It Takes Root delegation that we're here with, along with Indigenous peoples from the Global South and also the Global North, allies within what they're calling the Indigenous Bloc, organized a canoe action on one of the canals here in Paris, where they really talked about, water is life. And water is being commodified, water is being taken away from Indigenous communities in particular. And it was a very powerful action that started with ceremony and healing and bringing together Indigenous peoples from the Global South and the Global North to really deliver their message in a very powerful way in canoes in the canals here in Paris.
Now, Cindy, I understand there was to be a major march on the last day or the day after the meeting ends, or that's would be this coming weekend. But of course, the ban on protests, I understand, is still in effect. What do you know about what people are planning on the streets of Paris, possibly in defiance of the ban?
Yeah, so we've been defying the ban, actually starting on November 29th. I think we saw the symbolic shoes that were placed on the Republic, and then we may have seen on the news sort of the police crackdown and repression. But what was missed in the middle of that was actually 10,000 people that came out and along what was supposed to be the march route, starting from La République to all the way to the Nation, and over 2 miles of people standing together, actually in the contingents that were pre-designated in this past year and a half of organizing. And I think that defiance was really key because there was a partial lift on the ban, and I think for us as movements are really happy, and we see that as a direct result of the defiance that happened on November 29th, with the human chain, where we all held hands and stood on the streets, to raise our voices, on the eve of the COP starting, as global leaders were literally, landing in Paris. And I think that was important. And, despite the ban and protests, or this sort of hybrid ban that this is continued, there's definitely a ban in terms of any actions at La Bourget, which is where the negotiations are taking place, but also in key, iconic locations here in the city. But I think we're really clear as Grassroots Global Justice, as the It Takes Roots delegation, that and as well as multiple global movements, that we're here to raise our voices, against war, against racism, and against the pollution, profiteering. And we're standing in solidarity with people, the folks that were the innocent victims of the recent violence. But I think that we're very clear that we need to stand against this illegitimate criminalization of protest, and that civil society, popular movements, indigenous movements, and society in general have a right to raise their voices in dissent, especially when our futures are being negotiated away. And more than ever, I think our voices are needed. And so I think this is a very critical moment. I think that the pressure is on. There was We were planning civil disobedience and a mass kind of convergence on December 12th, and it's been wearing. We're like in daily the organizers are in daily, almost hourly negotiation with the police about whether or not we can be on the streets. And I think it's ridiculous and so hypocritical, because you see football games continue, you see the massive Christmas markets that are out in the streets, and you see people gathering. And I think it's a very directed attack on protesters during the COP. People are still under house arrest. There's about
so,
20.
So are the French police imagining that terrorists are going to be more likely to attack demonstrations, climate justice demonstrations, and less likely to attack football games and Christmas markets, especially given that they targeted the concert hall in Bataclan?
Yes, I think it's very clear that President Hollande doesn't want to be embarrassed in front of, you know, global leaders. There's a lot at stake around there being an agreement, and I think that mobilizations contradict that. And so I think people are getting ready to celebrate any agreement that is got into. And I think the movement having the last word on the 12th. Leaves that in question. And so I think that's what's really at stake here.
And so the attacks on Paris by the Islamic State were a gift to Hollande.
Yeah, you can say that. I mean, I think it's really sad that that's, was being utilized hypocritically rather than, you know, the movement, the climate coalition, and you know, we are part of the international planning facilitative body. We had discussions, you know, the weekend and the days leading after the attack. And we were very clear that this had to be a peace march for climate, you know, that we needed to connect the issues of war and we needed to be able to talk about, you know, these like root systemic causes of climate change itself. That ultimately connects, you know, back to, you know, peace and democracy and equitable solutions, not military violence. And so I think that that's something that was a really missed opportunity, I think, on behalf of the government here and also the UN process.
And it just all of this reminds me, of course, of those months following the September 11th attacks when the global anti-globalization organizing was essentially squashed in the name of fighting terrorism. And we might be seeing a repeat of that today. Well, Cindy, best of luck to you. Thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
Thank you so much for having me and being able to share what's happening here in Paris.
Cindy Wiesner is the national coordinator of the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance, speaking to me from Paris, France. I'll be heading to Paris for the COP21 talks as well, and I'll be bringing you reports from the meeting next week. This is Uprising. Anna Buss is our assistant producer. Our theme music is by Quetzal. Visit us online at uprisingwithsonali.com. Like us at facebook.com/uprisingradio. Follow us at twitter.com/uprisingradio. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, host, audio engineer, and executive producer of Uprising. I'll see you next time.